Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, January 6th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to catch up on some box office news, and then we're also going to talk about Ryan Scott's top 10 movies of 2024. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, it's good to talk to you again in the new year. We have not talked about box office stuff since December 16th. It has been a little while, so I was hoping you could just catch me up on what's been going on in the world of the box office over the sort of Christmas holiday break. I did not really pay much attention to what was happening at the box office at all, and I'm not sure how much our listeners did either. But I suspect even when you're off, Ryan, you're paying attention to this stuff. So tell me what the latest is. What should I know?
Yeah, the sickness that I have is that even if I didn't do this for a living, I would still be looking at all this stuff for my own whatever. I don't know why, but I question that sometimes. But yeah, so the big thing, and we had teed it up a couple times because there were a couple of sort of slow weekends there, is that sort of the big showdown to end last year was Mufasa and Sonic 3. So I'm going to catch you up on this as quickly as I possibly can. Sonic 3 won the first two weekends. It's doing very well for itself. So $60.1 million opening, and Mufasa trailed on that initial with a $35.4 million opening. So it sort of looked like Mufasa had, missed the mark, not going to do as well as the original did. But then last weekend, they were almost in a dead tie with Sonic barely winning. And now this past weekend over New Year's, Mufasa actually took the top spot with $23.8 million. Now, what's notable about that is, if you'll notice, that $23.8 million figure is not that far off that $34 million figure. So this movie has sprouted legs like crazy. I kind of suspected it might, even though... So it's not going to make anywhere near the $1.6 billion of the 2019 original, but... You know, after what sort of looked like a flop, so relatively speaking, because of its $200 million budget, it's now made $168.6 million domestically, $307.8 million internationally. It's at $476.4 million worldwide. It passed Beetlejuice to become the 10th highest grossing movie released in 2024. It is all but assured to get to $600 million worldwide now. You get to three times your budget, no matter how big it is. That should make most studios happy. So, it's a heck of a comeback, and it sort of shows why Disney made the movie. It also sort of shows, in that late December window, why that is a very valuable window, because, going back to 2009, that's how Avatar made all of its money. Let us never forget that Avatar opened to, I think, like $72 million, and it made almost $3 billion worldwide. The kind of thing, because of the way January and February work, you can just leg out like crazy, like no other spot on the calendar, really. So that's also what's happening with Sonic, for what it's worth. Sonic has made $187.5 million domestically to date. But overseas is where Mufasa is really crushing. Like, for example, Sonic has made $148.8 million overseas, I think around half what Mufasa has made. But it's at $336.3 million worldwide so far. It is going to become the highest grossing Sonic movie, but it also pushed the Sonic franchise over $1 billion worldwide, which is that's a big deal, because Paramount has kept the budgets of these very reasonable. The first two were made for $90 million. This one, I believe, is in the $120 million range, which is still very reasonable for the third installment of a CGI live action hybrid franchise film. So return on investment is stellar there, and no signs of slowing down. Sonic 4 is already on the books for 2027, and it's impressive what they've done. It's a situation where sort of you don't necessarily have to lower one to raise the other. Both are doing very well, and it's good because as we talked about in our preview, there it's going to be a pretty quiet January. So, you know, if you have movies with the ability to leg out, you know, that helps sort of carry the load where we're not relying on the Beekeeper to hold an entire month, you know, for sure.
Yeah, man. Okay. So congrats to the folks who work on Sonic. I've not seen any of those movies, but I know that, like, especially kids really love them. I know BJ was a big fan of them too. So it's not just kids. I don't mean to say it like that.
No, Sonic has a very rabid fan base. And my understanding really is that, like, I actually do intend to catch up with them. I just haven't gotten around to it, but my understanding is that they're very faithful to, you know, what people love from those games. So, you know, whether or not you're a kid, if you like those games, it's, you know, it's the thing that video game movies didn't do for so long, which is they just sort of ignored the source material and made something else, you know, whereas like these movies, Wow, what do you know? If you embrace the source material that people like, then maybe it'll work out. The one thing I'd like to, before we move on, is that there was a last week at the end of the week, there was a weird thing that happened. Certain sections of Twitter, and other social media platforms started believing that there was some sort of conspiracy that Disney was perhaps paying Box Office Mojo and the numbers to not report daily numbers for Sonic the Hedgehog 3 to make it look like Mufasa was doing better than it was at the box office. This sort of took off a little bit in certain circles. I wrote a whole piece about this, but I just need to put this out there for anyone that's seen. That's not true. It didn't happen. What happened is, over the holiday corridor, every studio handles reporting differently those numbers that those websites such as Box Office Mojo and the numbers get are estimates or direct reports from the studios. They're not making those numbers up. So I ended up getting in touch with someone at the numbers, Brian C. Ellerman, who is their data collection manager. He said the reason for the Sonic omission is due to the New Year's holiday. All the studios report or don't report differently from basically December 20th, so January 2nd. With some, it's kind of up in the air, and then all of the past numbers will be reported once, which is very common this time of year. I also talked to Scott Mendelson, who is perhaps the foremost box office expert in the industry, and he kind of said, you know, there's no conspiracy here. Both movies are doing very well. And even if you had just sort of looked at things a little more critically, Paramount had two other movies, Gladiator 2 and Better Man, in theaters, and those grosses hadn't been reported for the days that people were accusing Sonic of as well. So there's oddly a little more to this, but I just want to make it clear that for anyone that saw that floating around, it was nonsense, and sort of created the first very bizarre story that had to be debugged for 2025. So welcome to the new year, everybody.
Yes. Well, thanks for doing the legwork on that. And yes, debunking that. The last thing I'll say about the Sonic Mufasa thing is, I mean, congrats to Barry Jenkins. Like, I love Barry Jenkins as a director. I'm never going to watch Mufasa, Ryan. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I'm just not going to do it. I just cannot bring myself to do that. I do wonder what the success of that movie, slow as it may be or whatever, says about Disney's quote unquote live action remake strategy moving forward. Like, you know, we've noted many times on this podcast that they're running out of grade A material to adapt into this live action form. But Mufasa the Lion King is a prequel that was not based on anything. I mean, it's takes place in the Lion King universe, but it's not adapting any previous other work directly. It's an extension, a brand extension. So the success of this movie has me fearing that now, once they run out, they're just going to, you know, make an Alice in Wonderland prequel or some other thing.
Well, they already, you know, kind of tried that. I mean, let's not forget, they've done this before. They did Alice Through the Looking Glass. You know, they did Alice in Wonderland, and Alice Through the Looking Glass made very little money. You know, that was a flop. And then they did Maleficent Mistress of Evil, you know, which did $491 worldwide against $185 budget. So that wasn't particularly successful, but it also wasn't an outright flop either. So, you know, they've kind of towed the waters with this before.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about Maleficent 2. I totally forgot that movie existed. I have not seen either of those either, for like full disclosure. But yeah, okay. Anyway, yeah, we'll have to see what they do. And I would not be surprised if they greenlight more of these kind of in-between brand extension kind of things instead of coming up with new stuff. So anyway.
Well, but especially because the only thing with Mufasa, you can't really make one of those movies for less than $200 million because it's all motion capture, all CGI, all like it's tremendously expensive. You could make a Cinderella 2 cheaper. You know what I mean? Like if you had to, like you could find a way to get that budget down. So like, yeah. I'm not saying that you're going to make Cinderella, but I'm saying that like hypothetically, you know, there are ways to potentially make something like this work. I'm not necessarily an advocate for it. Like I think Pete's Dragon is one of the best things to happen in Disney in the last decade. So like, if you can make a movie that good, I'm all for it. But like, I'm also all for anything that helps keep the lights on. And look, families need stuff to go watch too. And that's why this movie's crushing. So like, you know, who am I to say? Moana 2 is, you know, about to cross $1 billion. And that was supposed to be a Disney Plus series. I'm all for keeping the lights on. Like, I'll, you know, I understand anyone's cynicism, but I also think that these movies have their place. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay. So what other big box office stories do we need to touch on before we shift over into your top 10?
Yeah, I will go over this as quickly as I possibly can. So the big one currently is Nosferatu, Robert Eggers of The Witch and The Lighthouse fame, long-awaited remake of Nosferatu. It has been crushing it, to put it mildly. It opened much bigger than expected with $21.6 million, and that's over the pure weekend, by the way. If you account for the full Christmas holiday, its number was much, much bigger. I think it was around 40 million or something like that. So it has made, it has well beyond anyone's expectations. It has now made $69.4 million domestically and 30.9 internationally, just over $100 million worldwide. So it is doing exceptionally well. It dropped just 39% this most recent weekend. And that's a great hold for a horror movie anyway. But when we consider that this movie opened over the Christmas corridor, where its opening weekend was technically like that 5-day opening, and it still only dropped 39% in its second weekend, the buzz is strong on this. It added 140 screens this week. So it is showing no signs of slowing down. And the other thing is this upcoming weekend, there are still no new horror movies in theaters. So until Wolfman arrives on January 17th, this is still the only game in town for horror fans. So, you know, this could easily get to 150 worldwide. And I mean easily, because it just started its international rollout this past weekend, if not 200 million worldwide. I don't mean to be too, you know, optimistic here, but we're looking at a straight up gigantic hit, even with its $50 million budget. To become Focus Features' biggest movie of all time, it would need to pass London Has Fallen, which made $195 million worldwide. It might not get there, but it might get close. Yeah, this is hugely impressive. And, you know, Eggers, for all of his critical acclaim, has not really had a mainstream hit at all. You know, The Witch was a big hit relative to its budget. It got very far on its critical acclaim. The Northman, as we've talked about several times on the show, pretty big bomb relative to its budget. This is just a full-blown breakthrough mainstream hit, but also one that seems to be very much relatively uncompromised based on his vision. So, I mean, I think that's pretty cool. It is a remake, yes, but, you know, the fact that people are seeking out something that very much has like an auteur-driven vibe to it and is in, you know, sort of R-rated uncompromised vision of a thing, that's pretty cool. You know, I don't have a lot more to say there, but I mean, that's you know, I don't know if you have anything to add, Ben, but I think it's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I think my big takeaway is this is great news for Robert Eggers' career, because I think there was, right after The Northman, there was a lot of hand-wringing in the industry about like, oh no, is this guy going to keep getting the budgets that he wants to make these big auteur-driven sort of artist-friendly visions. And I think an unqualified success like what he's had with Nosferatu is just great news for other studios and people wanting to give him money in the future. When they see a success like this, they're like, oh, maybe I can get a part of it, you know, repeat that formula, repeat that success later on down the line or whatever. So that's awesome. Also, Ryan, real quick, if you would have given me 20 guesses, I never, never, never would have come up with London Has Fallen as Focus Features' highest grossing movie ever.
I got to tell you, looking at the numbers list when I pulled that up, my eyes, because just below that is the Downton Abbey movie, which like that totally, like that's 100%. Like, oh yeah, that completely checks out. And then like, I'll tell you, this list gets interesting. So I'll just run through Focus to a top 10 just very quickly, just to give you an idea where Nosferatu could land up. Downton Abbey movie. Then we have Brokeback Mountain, of course, makes a ton of sense. Burn After Reading makes a ton of sense. Coraline shot way up that list because of the re-release last year. Then Johnny English Strikes Again. which again, like, it's interesting. Then Darkest Hour, Atonement, Pride and Prejudice, and The Theory of Everything. So it's like, eight of those are like super focused features movies, and then two of them are the weirdest things.
Wow.
But anyway, that is we're getting really off topic here. But the only other thing that I would point out is that A Complete Unknown also opened over the holidays, which was the Bob Dylan biopic. That has held really well. Made $8 million in its second weekend, almost $12 million in its first weekend. So it's at almost $42 million domestically, which is, for a Bob Dylan biopic in this environment, I think is really good. The problem is I heard it's got a $70 million budget. So, you know, to what degree does Searchlight weigh out the awards love versus the money? I don't know. I do know that it's already one of Searchlight's biggest movies. So, like, take that for what it's worth. The other interesting thing is A24 is Baby Girl, the Nicole Kidman movie. Dropped less than a fraction of a percent in its third weekend. So weekend two, it went wide and it made basically $4.4 million. This past weekend, because of word of mouth, it also made $4.4 million on almost the same number of screens. So word of mouth is insane. I mean, that you just never see that. So word of mouth is insane on that. That one actually figures to be a decent hit for A24 if it can pick up. So it might make more money than Anora as this year's sort of sexy awards season buzzy movie, which is kind of interesting. But that's all I got, man.
Okay. Well, yeah, that was great. Thanks, Ryan. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and run through your top 10 movies of 2024.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
All right, before we get started, you mentioned off mic that you had some categories that you wanted to run through. I was going to ask you if you had any honorable mentions, movies that didn't make your list. So why don't you sort of throw all of those into one for me? Mention any honorable mentions if you have them. And then, yeah, tell me about this category idea that you had.
Okay, so I was looking over my honorable mentions and I felt like a few of them had like actual like a category I could put them in. So these are all my honorable mentions, but some of them will come with what I've designated as a category of sorts. So okay. First off, we have In a Violent Nature, which is what I'm calling the so close but not so quite movie of the year. So close but not quite, because In a Violent Nature, for the first 80% of the movie, I was like, this is my favorite movie of the year. And then the ending happens and I don't know what to feel. I'm still wrestling with it to this day, but the first 80% of In a Violent Nature is a movie I've wanted to exist for my entire life. Long Legs gets the You Scared the Shit Out of Me award. I don't know that it quite cracks my top 10, but it is the first movie in years that I've literally lost sleep over, and that is certainly worth something.
Wow.
I would also like to designate Kill as the best movie that nobody saw. It is like an action movie, an Indian action movie that all takes place on a train where this guy is trying to like save his fiance's kidnapped family, and it is the most violent thing that I have seen. It is a ton of fun. I don't know that it's a particularly great movie if you were to like put it like try to get it like Academy Awards or anything, but it's truly truly a very entertaining. And then Heretic, purely for Hugh Grant's performance, the best performance of the year that I saw. And then the third act of Alien Romulus, specifically the first two thirds of that movie are good. The third act is why I go to the movies. And then I'd also like to highlight VHS Beyond. I gave that movie a stellar review, but for some reason, when I thought about it going over my top 10, just, you know, cause it's you think about the individual segments more than you do the thing as a whole, but VHS Beyond is stellar. That's maybe my biggest honorable mention, but, that's kind of the list there.
Excellent. All right. So let's jump into the proper list here. What is your number 10 movie of 2024?
I will say, anyone who's listened to this podcast for a while, I'm not a big fan of ranking my personal stuff, and Ben makes me do this, and I get mad at him every time. So I avoided getting mad at him this time because I didn't want to have the conversation. But I will say, this is all very, like, loose. This is, like, a very – I could probably have a different 10 tomorrow, but I just settled on this. So number 10 is Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. Is it as good as Godzilla versus Kong? No. Is it as good as a lot of movies? Probably not if you were to dissect it. But I will say I'm probably likely to rewatch this movie more than almost any other movie in these of these 10 that I'm going to mention. If Godzilla Minus One is the best argument for Godzilla as legitimate cinema, Godzilla X Kong is the polar opposite end of the argument of Godzilla as shameless blockbuster entertainment. And Lord knows I love both. I don't know, man. I call me crazy, but Godzilla sleeping in the Colosseum and Kong getting a big metal arm to hit pyramids with, you know, come on. it's not great, but I've seen it three times now and I just love it. You know, whether or not it's high art, I don't know, but it really is a lot of fun. So I don't really have anything else to say about it. You know what you're getting out of the movie and it delivers.
Well, we have a couple more of these top 10 episodes to go before we wrap up. And I am confident in saying that this is not going to be on anybody else's list. So I love the fact that it's on yours. And this is such a Ryan movie. So I'm very curious to know what the rest of your top 10 looks like if this is number 10. So
I got to tell you, as far as like if we're averaging my list out with like everyone else at Slash Film, I am dragging down the average of like a lot of these other movies that are going to be on everyone else's list. I also should mention the last 2 months of my life got very chaotic. And I have missed, like, I've not seen Nosferatu yet. I've missed so many movies. So there's a lot of stuff that, like, that's going to be in the Oscar race that I'm going to see at some point that probably could edge some of these out. But for right now, I haven't seen them. So this is,
gotcha.
Yeah. Anyway, but number nine, another one that probably isn't going to be on anybody else's list here, Deadpool and Wolverine. If we were ranking my best times in a movie theater this year, this might be number one. I have been very soft on the MCU as of late, but I was also like maybe the most in favor of the MCU at its height. I loved this stuff. I lived for it. And the post Endgame stuff has been tough for me. The TV shows particularly have just felt like a drag and I've just not been into it. And Deadpool and Wolverine made me feel that Marvel feeling again. Again, it's not a like exceptional movie in the traditional sense, but it knows what it's doing. It's not apologizing for it. And if you kind of embrace that, it truly is a blast. And I don't know. I feel like in our circles, I'm not saying Slash Film, but I mean like the critical circles and people that I feel like it's easy to kind of like not love a movie like this and kind of like it's an easy target. But I'm also kind of an easy target as the audience member for this one. So I truly, truly had a blast. Hugh Jackman is firing on all cylinders here. I sort of have come to like what Sean Levy brings to the table as a blockbuster director. I really have.
Interesting. Know. Okay.
I know a lot of people disagree with me on that, but there's something about his like, this is way off topic, but Bill Nye, the Science Guy, has this interesting speech about vanilla ice cream and everyone uses vanilla as like this, like, you know, it's vanilla, it's plain, it's boring, but vanilla is actually very interesting and good. And, I don't know. I sort of feel like Sean Levy is like the interesting and good version of vanilla, but that's another conversation. So I'll leave it.
Okay. There. All right. So tell me your number eight.
This is one we talked about on the Horror Moments podcast. And I think I brought up, I begged people to watch this on a podcast episode, but Oddity, it is currently streaming on Shudder. It is maybe my favorite. It's my favorite non-franchise horror movie of the year. Oddity is awesome. It is maybe the most original thing I saw this whole year. Has one of my favorite scares in a movie of all time. Super inventive. I cannot encourage people to seek this out enough. If you complain that like we don't get original things anymore, please go watch Oddity. It's so good.
It's excellent. Yes. And I look forward to our Movie Moments of the Year podcast, which I think we're going to be doing in a couple weeks, where you can hopefully expound a little bit more on the scare that you just alluded to, because by that point we're going to be in full spoiler territory for all of the movies that we're going to be talking about. So we're giving people enough time to catch up with stuff before we dive into that conversation.
Yeah, but, and Ben knows the scene I'm talking about, and it's one of those things where I expect I won't get any pushback from the people that have seen the movie. It'll be one of those. It'll be one that I'm confident it will make the list.
I certainly hope so. I'll definitely be backing you on that.
Yeah.
One, so.
Yeah. Cause you know, I won't spoil it, but the tent scene, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. So good.
Yeah. It's so good. Okay. You're number seven.
This is the one that I think the least people have seen, but I don't know. Land of Bad is a movie that I've started to champion here. And, I watched this on a plane and I just kind of wanted something simple to watch. And look, all due respect, I hope he doesn't listen, but Liam Hemsworth is, all due respect, not his brother. The guy's kind of a drag on a lot of movies, and I don't find him to be particularly good. He is the lead here. He also stars along his brother, Luke Hemsworth. And very briefly, because a lot of people I'm assuming haven't seen this. It was in theaters, yes, but it was sort of more or less a direct-to-video action movie that ended up finding life on Netflix. Basically, it's this Delta Force team ends up in like enemy territory, and it's kind of a one guy having to save the rest of his crew, and Russell Crowe plays like a drone pilot that's helping him from like literally continents away. I can't believe how good it is. Like, it's seriously like so wildly entertaining. Like, when I was watching it, I was like rarely more upset that I wasn't watching something in a theater. It is punching so far above its weight class. Like, it is truly, truly good. It is one of my favorite Russell Crowe performances in years. If you just want like a straight up action movie, like meat and potatoes, good action movie, this is it. It is on Netflix now. I implore you to watch it. It is better than it has any right to be.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. This is in my Netflix queue, and I heard good things about this movie when it came out, but I just didn't really prioritize it. But the fact that it's made your top 10 now really has me questioning my choice to wait on this. So I'll have to sort of kick it up my own personal priority list. I'll try to watch this in the next few days and report back to you. So
yeah, it almost made it higher. I'll say that true. It just kept climbing my list as the more I thought about it. So,
all right. So what's your number six?
I think we're at number, number six. So this is where, this is another one. I don't know if this is going to be on anybody else's, but The Idea of You, for as surprised as I was by Land of Bad, for as surprised as I was by Oddity, The Idea of You is the biggest surprise of the year for me. I expected a very like by the numbers rom-com, you know, made for Amazon, whatever. I was so unbelievably charmed and touched by this movie when I saw it at South by Southwest. Like, I cannot believe how much I love this movie. In a just world, Anne Hathaway would be more in the award season conversation, I think, for her performance in this movie. But yeah, I mean, just a truly wonderful, wildly unconventional love story. Kind of feels like almost like it would make a good double feature with Silver Linings Playbook. I truly, for anyone that skipped over this, just thinking it was going to be your run of the mill rom-com, I would really implore you to maybe give it a second look. It's got a lot more going on. It's got a lot more on its mind. It's got stellar performances. It's genuinely sexy. It's funny. It's great.
The Idea of You. Yes. That's streaming on Prime Video right now. So check that out. What's your number five, Ryan?
Number five, as I alluded to, there is another horror movie on this list, and it is this one. It is A Quiet Place Day One. A Quiet Place was my favorite movie of 2018. I love this franchise. I was nervous about them sort of going the prequel route because I felt like I worried it was going to be one of those things where don't answer questions I don't have, you know, like, but what I did not expect was to go into this and get this beautiful sort of rumination on the nature of life and death. And it is like a performance piece. It's beautifully artsy. Lupita Nyong'o delivers again, like one of the best performances of her year, of the year in a horror movie. No one will give it credit for, like, similar to when she was in Us. I mean, just, I don't know if you saw this or not, but I talk about a movie that, like, again, just like subverted expectations in a lot of ways. Sure. Is there big alien action and stuff? Yes. But what's going on all around that is like nothing shy of a miracle within the realm of blockbuster filmmaking.
Excellent. Man, this is a great pick. I did see this movie. I did like it quite a bit. I love the fact that it made your list because I feel like it was one of those things that was kind of like talked about and then forgotten about. And so anything we can do to sort of get it back on people's radar, I think, is a good thing because it really deserves to sort of hold space in the zeitgeist or whatever for longer than it did. So Quiet Place Day One, great, great pick. I'm guessing that's streaming on Paramount Plus right now. You can probably find it there. So what is your number four, Ryan?
My number four pick is what I'm labeling as Slash Film's favorite movie of the year, it seems like, Conclave. Which I think, and I only say that because it seems like this is the movie that everyone seems to agree on. Conclave fucking rules. And I have reserved F-bombs to sort of, I'm not trying to overdo it with the F-bombs. This movie deserves it. Conclave is a movie that you go in and said, it's about selecting a new pope. And you're like, what's interesting about that? Everything is interesting about that. I leaned over to my fiance when we were about 20 minutes into the movie and I said, is this the best movie ever made? And I knew I was joking, but it's one of those movies that while you're watching it, you're convinced you're just so in it. It does such an incredible job of, like, from the jump, you are engaged. Like, every single person that they cast is like firing on all cylinders. I don't know. I just, it is a truly, truly, truly excellent, like, I dare call it a thriller. Like, I don't know. It really winds up in an unexpected place. And, you know, Ralph Fiennes is doing what he does best. And I mean, Stanley Tucci, maybe with like a career best. I'm not super sure about that, but I mean, just truly cannot encourage people to seek this one out enough.
Yeah. Incredibly entertaining stuff. All right. So that was your number four. Tell me your number three.
This one I think you and I might be aligned on, maybe not so much on the placement, but The Remarkable Life of Evelyn. This is a movie you've been championing for about a whole year, basically, because you saw it, I believe, at Sundance last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is now in the... It is one of the three or four best documentaries I've ever seen in my entire life, two of which I saw this year. I mean... You talk about it, the term tearjerker gets thrown around. It is reserved for this movie. I mean, just a beautiful story about this kid who, you know, had a bunch of muscular issues and couldn't really move very much and ended up getting like deeply into World of Warcraft, and his parents sort of discovering this whole other life he had after he passed away. It is on Netflix right now. It is a beautiful movie. I anecdotally, I could tell you, I kept telling my fiance to watch this, and we had to take this 8-hour drive back from Arizona, and she downloaded it on her tablet and was watching it while we were driving with her headphones on. And she kept like, oh God, oh no. And I kept hearing, she's like crying again, and she's not a big crier in movies. And it was just like, it is that effective. It is such a good movie. And I must thank you, Ben. This is one that would not have been on my radar had you not pushed it onto mine. So I'm hoping to do that for other people as well, because it is.
Yeah. I'm a little bummed that Netflix didn't do a great job of pushing this on people's radar, because obviously I love it. I'm glad that you love it as well. And anything we can do to sort of make sure that people see it, I think we're doing a service of some kind anyway. So Evelyn, great stuff.
It's one of those movies that deserves, it'll deserve more than it can ever possibly get. But number two, The Wild Robot, a movie that floored me. I thought like, oh, this will be cute. Lupita Nyong'o again, just absolutely crushing it. But this is DreamWorks' finest hour. I'm prepared to say that I had that feeling that I had when I watched WALL-E for the first time. Not just because there's robot in it, but because I was like, oh yeah, like it feels so stupid, but you have to be reminded, like, animated movies are like, so when they're firing on all cylinders, like when they're at the top of their game, these are some of the best things that the industry can provide us with. The Wild Robot is, I cried so hard I had a headache when I left the theater. I gave this is the only movie I've ever reviewed that I gave a perfect 10 out of 10 to. And that's not to say it's like the best movie ever made, but it is to say that relative to what it is, you could not do better. You could not ask for better. There's not a frame of this movie that I would change. It is a remarkable experience. It is that classic, even though it's not Pixar, it does what Pixar does so well, which is that thing where, yes, it can be for kids, but it is so deeply about life and not afraid to be about life in a way that can resonate with any human being who has a pulse. Stylish. I mean, just stunning. I really can't say enough good things about it, to the point where I almost get like lost in my own head trying to figure out what to say about it. If I didn't have such an affinity for the franchise that my number one is connect to, this should probably be my number one of the year, but my heart wants what it wants. So
yes, indeed. All right. Well, The Wild Robot is available to rent for like $6 on Apple and Microsoft and Spectrum.
It's
and
also getting like right a, now. It's also getting a re-release in theaters next week. Time to the Oscar nominations. I wonder why. If you missed it in theaters, I would encourage you maybe when the re-release happens to give it a go.
Man, I wonder if there's ever been, I'm sure there has to have been, a studio that scheduled a re-release for something just sure that their movie was going to be nominated for an Oscar, and then that nomination ended up not happening. I wonder what the historical precedent.
Yeah, we might want to look into that, because that would be kind of funny. But
and then like what happened? Like, did they keep the theatrical run that was planned, or did they pull the plug or whatever? Yeah, interesting. So if anybody happens to know that information off the top of their head, shoot me an email. I'll give you the email address at the end of this episode. All right, Ryan, we've arrived at your number one, and I knew it was going to be somewhere on your list. I didn't realize it was going to be quite this high, but tell people what it is.
I didn't realize it was going to be quite this high either, but I rewatched this recently. So Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, people. Come on, if you've listened to this podcast this year, or even if you go back to my earliest Slack messages last year when we got the first piece of concept art and I begged to be put into cryo sleep until this movie came out, West Ball really took the ball and ran with this one. I after the Caesar trilogy, after what Matt Reeves did, it's like, how do you pick that up and continue? Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is the answer. I think the thing is that for anyone that's only seen this movie once, I would say that if you even liked it, I encourage you to watch it again, because rewatches are what unlocked it for me. Like, I liked it the first time I saw it. And then the second time I saw it, I was like, oh, this is an absolute, like, this is a masterpiece. And then the third time I have fallen head over heels for this movie. And more also to the point of, now that we know we're getting at least one sequel, like what it sets up and what it boldly does for the future, the continued future of what I would argue is the most consistent franchise in the history of cinema. You know, there's only like two bad Planet of the Apes movies, and all of the other ones are some version of good to great. This is great. I think, like, from a visual effects standpoint, you just don't get much better. Having to move on from Caesar, but then you introduce us to new characters who are also super compelling. I think what Kevin Durand is doing as Proximus Caesar is like next level cool. And, you know, like the best villain was right guy since Magneto, right? Like, this dude is super right. Like, Proximus Caesar is right about, you know, his viewpoint. And I think Noah is an incredible lead. I think the dynamic between Noah and Nova, like that final confrontation between them, I don't want to get into spoilers too much here, but like, there is this final confrontation between Nova and Noah that is so good. Like, you just get up and you're like, that's movies, baby. Like, that's like, you just, you know, and then what that leads to in the end of this movie and what it sets up. I just, for some people, it ran the risk of sort of bordering on being like a 2-hour trailer for the movie you want to see. I disagree with that, but I will say I was like, shouting at the top of my lungs practically about how excited I was for what was coming next. So I don't know. I mean, I love this franchise. I love these movies. I've said it before, but when you walk into my house, the first two things you see right next to each other are a Skyfall poster and a Conquest of the Planet of the Apes poster. you know, so I am in the bag for these movies. But I'm also, to that end though, just like with the MCU stuff, if you disappoint me, I'll be the first to say it. And this movie did not disappoint. So I shall quit monologuing about my beloved apes. But when I searched my soul and my heart for what the movie of the year was that really did it for me, this is it.
I love this list, Ryan. It's so you. You know, you read a lot of people's lists online and it kind of feels like there's some sort of performative artistry going on of like, all right, where am I going to, you know, pick this and where am I going to drop this sort of highly acclaimed thing in here to like show my bona fides or whatever. And as always, you just dispense with all of that nonsense and just cut straight to the core of it. It's such a pure Ryan Scott list. So
look, I like what I like and my tastes are probably the metaphorical equivalent of always like I'm desperate for popcorn entertainment to the point where I will pick it up off the ground and eat it if I think it's good enough. And you know, this list speaks to that. But the one last thing that I would like to say is that one of the best movies I saw this in 2024 was a movie called Grand Theft Hamlet, also a documentary. However, that movie is not getting a theatrical release until this year. It's getting a release later this month, so it is technically a 2025 movie. So that's why I did not include it, because it is technically not a 2024 movie, but I must implore you all to get Grand Theft Hamlet on your radar.
Ryan, I just saw a screener of this, and I want to talk to you about it when the movie actually comes out. So
okay,
we'll save
awesome.
Our conversation right. until yeah. then. But yeah, definitely put that movie on your radar. It's called Grand Theft Hamlet. All right, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about most of the movies that we talked about at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.